Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The tight end position league-wide, give me a guy that you look at and say, wow, that guy is the guy, other than yourself, at the tight end position.
So hear me out. I mean, Travis Kelce, 6 seasons in a row, 1,000 yards. I'm pretty sure he has the most receiving yards over any wide receiver skill position in the last 6 years. And he gets paid half of what a wide receiver makes, which just boggles my mind.
I appreciate Kittle saying that because, you know, that's my guy. And he always wants to see every tight end get paid as much as, you know, their production is. But at the same time, I signed my contract understanding what I had, and at the same time, you know, I put a lot into this, man, and money is money in my mind is almost a secondary at this point in my career. I'm here for the legacy, and I'm here to try and make the Kansas City Chiefs the best team possible, man.
AKA Travis Kelce is not selfish.
I'm glad you went there because I was thinking the same thing.
but look, how do you reconcile Kelce at 15?
Yeah.
When the top of the receiver market is kissing 30 now? That's a hell of a bargain for the Chiefs.
Well, it just happened this year where this all went crazy, right? I mean, as far as the receivers. So it's still, I think the market's adjusting and going to have to adjust a little bit because of that. You're right. It looks awkward. It does, but I mean, come on, that's one of the main stories, and I think something that we'll probably look back in time to go, man, the 2022 offseason changed the game, especially at the pass-catching positions in the NFL by these contracts. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if some of these numbers catch up with the tight ends because they're not – a lot of them are just big wide receivers, and they're used like that. So it's a valid point by Kittle and everybody else.
Well, and you've got Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's contract was expiring after this season, and he wanted a hell of a lot of money. And the Chiefs were like, well, you know, and at some point they had to have had the conversation, is this guy really worth twice of what Travis Kelce is worth? And if we're going to give this guy close to 30, how do we keep only paying Travis Kelce 15? Remember the Julio Jones problem,
right,
from
4 years
ago in Atlanta, right, was sparked by Matt Ryan making 30 when Julio was making 15. And he's not twice as valuable as I am to this team. It's even easier to make that argument when the two guys in question both run pass routes and catch passes from Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
And there's no way Tyreek Hill is twice as valuable as Travis Kelce. And I suspect that was probably one of the factors that they considered at some point. Because if we pay Tyreek Hill what he wants, we can't in good conscience not adjust the contract of Travis Kelce.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, it's a hard thing to sell, you know, to your football team. I think, it, you know, between that, getting close to the age of 30, and maybe they're going to be one of those teams, like we've talked about, that's just going to go, wait, we have an eye for receivers. We'll find guys other ways than paying somebody $30 million a year. I could see Andy Reid and company kind of having that approach, certainly. And, you know, to your point too, Mike, you know, I need to go back and look and maybe check out some of the numbers, but my football intuition tells me that the Chiefs struggled a lot more when Travis Kelce is in the lineup than Tyreek Hill. As awesome as Tyreek Hill is, that still Kelce on a play-by-play basis is dependent on more kind of where it's just like, hey, Tyreek, run fast over there, or run fast over there. Kelsey's doing things underneath and working on a guy and got a little bit more of, I guess, a tangible spot within the offense to me than Tyreek Hill did at times.
The other reality, too, Travis Kelce is signed through 2025. He's under contract for 4 more years. And at some point, they've got to address it. You know, next year, $12.25 million. The year after that, $14. The year after that, $16.25. The market's going to keep going up. The cap's going to keep going up. At some point, they need to take care of him. And maybe he said what he said last week, knowing that he's gotten assurances that they're going to take care of him, that he's going to be part of the team for a long time to come, and that he's not going to get the treatment that Tyreek Hill got, which is, if you don't want to be here, we'll send you to a place where you won't have Patrick Mahomes. And I think that's part of it for Kelce, too.
I think so.
If you push too hard, all of a sudden you're no longer connected to Patrick Mahomes. You're going to have to break in with a new quarterback. And he has played with other quarterbacks. I think Kelce can appreciate the special nature of having Patrick Mahomes as his guy.
No doubt. No doubt. That's one where I think the situation, the team, your spot in the lure of the franchise, the quarterback and the offense and how they use you. Again, I'm not trying to tell anybody how to live their life, and I know we have our fun about the selfish and not selfish conversation, but that's one where I'd go, you know what, I'd probably take a few million dollars left to just continue to be in this situation here than roll the dice and maybe be in some crap situation somewhere else in the NFL.
The hardest thing about it, though, is when you consider guys in their 20s, the kind of money that they're making, and then the question of, once I can't play anymore, what am I going to do? How do I replace this? You know, other than Tom Brady or Tony Romo, I mean, guys who go from playing football and making as much or more in broadcasting, those jobs aren't growing on trees.
No, they're definitely not.
So that's the question. And the younger you are, you got to project forward. Like, how much do I really need? How much really sets me up for the rest of my life? What's the magic number? And am I leaving meat on the bone that could help take care of me the final 10 years of my life?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I think
I know.
Those
you're
are
real,
and
real.
When you're 28, 29 years old, you're not wired to think that way.
Yeah, no, you're not. But you're right. Here I am at 42, and I'm looking down the barrel of kids going to college soon, and I'm going, damn, why didn't I drive some harder bargains in year 4 and say, screw you, GM. Screw you, Bruce Allen. Why? I want more money.
Why wasn't I selfish?
Wasn't I selfish? Exactly right is what I was saying. No doubt. I've said that to myself a few times after I retired.
It was a little surprised that the Browns opted to use the franchise tag on tight end David Njoku, a first-round pick who had finished his 5 years or 4 years. They had picked up the fifth-year option on David Njoku and then applied the franchise tag. So he had finished his 5 years. I'm sorry. I knew I would eventually get there. It just took a little while. There were times during his career where it felt like he was the odd man out, it felt like he wasn't going to become the player that they drafted him to be. They went out and signed Austin Hooper to the big contract. And after they used the franchise tag on David Njoku, I'm thinking they're not going to high-priced tight ends here. Hooper's on the endangered species list, and before you knew it, he was gone.
Yeah.
Well, now Njoku swaps the franchise tag for a 4-year extension, so it's a 5-year contract. The extension is worth $56.75 million, reportedly. It may be, you know, who knows? The real numbers eventually will come out, but it works out to about $14.1 million. For a guy who's never really had a year where you look at the numbers and say, holy crap, I mean, his career high in receiving yardage is 635. Travis Kelce has 6 straight 1,000-yard seasons. So, and Njoku is going to land at number 4 on this list. That's a stunner to me.
It is. I hear you.
And maybe it just tells me that the Browns have huge plans for the tight end position in the Deshaun Watson-led offense, Chris.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, this is one where, yes, I don't know if his name deserves to be on the list that we just saw of some of those guys there from the production standpoint. But I think this is one of those contracts that, and we'll see how it works out, that's chalked up a little bit to, wait, we kind of see potential here. The guy's got some freakish things about his football game. And probably knowing that, like, oh, gosh, if he goes somewhere else, oh, man, he could become a star. And I think that between the way you run the football there in Cleveland, we know the tight end can be played off of that so nicely in the play-action pass game. Yes, you got Deshaun Watson. You've made this huge investment there, so you want to make sure he's got options to throw to. So I think there's a lot of reasons that they do this. But, yes, I'm with you in this fact of, you know, to get these kind of numbers for a guy that, yes, doesn't have the production of the other guys on that list, it's a little surprising. But I think it's a potential pay maybe more than anything else.
386 receiving yards as a rookie. 639 was his high watermark in 2018. That was the year they didn't win a single game. Then he was limited to four games in 2019 due to injury. Last year, he had 475 receiving yards in 16 games with 11 starts. 22nd among tight ends in receiving yards last year with 475 yards. So, look, it's a reflection that the market is changing. And if I'm Travis Kelce, the Njoku contract is a hell of a lot more relevant to me than any of the receiver contracts, because it just demonstrates where the tight end market is going to start to go if that's what David Njoku is getting based on potential, not on production. And there's a guy out there who's in a three-year run of greatness with the Raiders. The worst of his 3 years, 655 receiving yards, still better than the best year of David Njoku's career, and that's Darren Waller. Waller was the subject of some trade rumors earlier in the offseason. Those never went anywhere. But now the question is, new contract possibly for Waller. Here he is talking to our friend Ross Tucker last week about his contract status with the Las Vegas Raiders.
My agent is working on that. I understand it. But I know if I, you know, focus on it too much, it could take away from, you know, my job and learning a new system and just continue to try to elevate and take care of my body in the right way. Try to focus on those things and let my agent handle that. And when decisions need to be made, decisions need to be made.
When decisions need to be made, they will be made. That is a little ominous. But when you consider Darren Waller's contract, I mean, he's at half of Kelce. Kelce is at half of the top of the receiver market. Waller is at half of Kelce and now woefully behind David Njoku. 2 years left on Darren Waller's deal. And I can't help but wonder, and as Pete points out, 25% of what Devontae Adams is going to make, and Adams is a stranger to the team who shows up, and they roll out the green carpet for Devontae Adams. Meanwhile, Darren Waller is like, what the hell about, what about me? I'm the one who's been here. I'm the one who's been the star player. You know, I have a feeling that to the extent there was any truth to the trade chatter, yeah, it may have just been he's exasperated by the failure of the team to take care of him, and that may have sparked some discussion and conversation about possibly moving him. This new regime has to figure out what they're going to do with Darren Waller. How do they value him? What are they willing to pay him? What are they going to do if they're not going to pay him what he wants? And what's he going to do? What decision is he going to make when training camp rolls around if he hasn't gotten a new contract? I think this is one we need to pay close attention to.
First off, did you roll out the green carpet? I like that. Did you mean to do that?
Yes.
You did? Yeah. Okay, this guy's nice. I think that's a good one. I mean, that's a good one. It's kind of like a Florioism. It is. It kind of like, I thought like maybe it just like money and red carpet, and went together and went green.
Yes.
I know. I understand why it is, but I didn't know if you did it intentionally or subliminally. That's what I was trying to get at, okay?
I did it on purpose.
All right, so you have more brains than me because I don't ever do it on purpose. All right. I'm with you there, though. I mean, this is a special player. This is the guy that I think you and I would look at and go, well, wait, he's about to be the highest paid guy at the position, right? I mean, he's worthy of that, what he's done on the football field. I think you can make conversation when he's healthy. I'm not sure he's not the best pass-catching tight end in football. He's right up there where I'd go Kittle might be the best all-around one. Kelce's the best pass-catching one. Waller, I think, can challenge Kelce a little bit. He's bigger than Kelce at this point of his career. He's faster than Kelce. Kelsey's still awesome. I get that. But I would think that this is a contract that, yes, breaks the record books a little bit here for sure. And, like, I would think ultimately they're going to bow down to his, you know, wants or needs here just because I'd be shocked. You know, you talk about tight end position being, you know, important to an offense or Deshaun Watson. Man, this is Josh McDaniels. This is coming from the New England Patriots. You know, it's the Giants, New York Giants old way. They believe in tight ends. That's for sure. I mean, gosh, McDaniels came from a place last year where they paid two tight ends double-digit millions to get there. You know, so I just would be shocked if he got out the door because I just keep thinking of that combination of Waller down the middle and Davante Adams working underneath him and McDaniels doing all these things to stress defenses out. Like, do you want to go Waller's deep? Davante Adams shallow. Oh, there's you know, Adams deep. Here's Darren Waller shallow. He's going to play games with people that way, and I would think that's going to be a big advantage for his offense. That's where I think he's got a little power here, Waller.
The versatility adds to the value because yeah. – As they like to do in New England, you can slip into the no-huddle offense and start moving the guy around.
Exactly
and
right.
Mismatches if you trap the defense on the field with a certain
Michael.
Personnel
right.
group. So yes. That's another reason for Waller to hold firm. And he would be working on 3,000-yard seasons, but for the injury. When you consider the fact that he missed six games last year with a knee problem, I think it was,
yep.
He turns 30 this year. Those are factors that may make the Raiders want to give it a year.
Yeah,
let's
right.
see how it goes this year. We'll take care of you next year, and Waller's people moving it toward a solution now. That may be where the push and pull is, and that could be the first test for Dave Ziegler, the new GM, and Josh McDaniels, the new head coach. What will they do about one of the most popular players on the team and a guy who is a great story, a great inspiration, everything he's overcome, the substance abuse issues. He's a great ambassador for this belief that you can turn your life around, and he and Derek Carr are close. Derek Carr and Davante Adams are close. They've
yep.
paid Carr. They've paid Adams. What are they going to do with Darren Waller? And I feel like they have to get it taken care of. And see, Waller's explanation underscores why we say Lamar Jackson needs an agent. Waller is focused on football. The agent is focused on contract.
Right.
It is two different universes.
Yeah.
Football and contract, two different things. So it's smart that he has somebody taking care of this, and somebody's
yeah.
going to have to make a decision about what he's going to do when training camp rolls around if he doesn't get what he wants, and maybe he won't be there.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I love you, Keo. You keep saying that with the agent thing because that is real. Like, I never understand that, you know, when guys are like, oh, I don't want to think about contract during the year. I mean, how much thinking are you doing? You're just hearing a message from the player. I mean, your agent from time to time and all that. But, like, that's what agents are there for. Start those conversations. You know what? Hey, don't, you know – don't drive me crazy with the small details. Just let me know when we get to a spot here where we got to really hash some things out. I mean, Tom Brady was working on owning the Dolphins, going to the Dolphins with Sean
Stop.
Payton, and a Fox Sports contract. Why? Because he was worried about football, and he had an agent kind of just, hey, Fox Sports came to you with this crazy deal. You want to think about it? Sure, I'll think about it. Get back to me with some details. That's where an agent really helps.
Yeah. But I will say this, if you're in the season, right, not having the contract becomes the distraction. Remember your Brandon Marshall story about
yep,
at the
right.
end of a season
yes.
where he hadn't gotten his contract, he didn't know he could go out there and give it his all because one injury and there goes his opportunity to get the money that he had
That's
earned.
That's the rough spot.
Based upon his performance to date. So it's not just having an agent who takes care of the issue, it's having the issue taken care of so you have peace of mind so you can go all in on the job that it is that you have to do that entails obvious physical risks. Back to the Browns.
Yeah.
The contract that was re-signed by Jadeveon Clowney last week, he's back with the team. We probably talked about that. We do have Jadeveon Clowney talking about why he decided to stay with the Browns for a second year. Here he is from late last week.
I just want to chase that Super Bowl. I think we got a shot at it. We had a great defense last year. We went out and got some more key players on offense and some more on defense. And I just feel like we got a shot. And I wouldn't want to do it no better team than the one I just played with last year.
I think the key is to whether or not they have a shot is how many games they're going to have Deshaun Watson for. It's kind of hard to assess where the Browns are. The bets aren't even on the board. Playoffs, not make the playoffs. the over-under win total. They are on the board for division championship, which makes no sense to me. How can you even begin to assess the Browns in any respect until you know whether or not they're going to have Deshaun Watson or Jacoby Brissett or Baker Mayfield or somebody else at quarterback? But, look, they have a talented team, and last year it was the Mayfield injury that threw everything off. We really didn't get a chance to see how good the Browns could be last year because their starting quarterback was injured all season.
No, I know. You're right. You know, and again, you know, it's a team that I think we were disappointed in. Yeah, they had the quarterback injury for sure. But, man, I mean, to piggyback off of what Jadeveon Clowney's saying there, I mean, damn, yeah, the Rams are one of those teams. The Browns are one of those teams when you look at them on paper – kind of like the Rams, you go, damn, there's a lot of good football players on this team. Like, damn, holy cow, everywhere. You know, Denzel Ward and Newsom at corner, John Johnson at safety, and Grant Delpit. You know, Owusu-Koramoah and Anthony Walker at linebacker. Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney and Chase Vinovich. I mean, the defense is stacked. They got players everywhere. Offense, we know it's one of the best offensive lines of football. Now you add in Amari Cooper, the two-headed monster running back, and David Njoku. I mean, I understand him wanting to go back there for sure. But yeah, the quarterback thing's a real thing. They are a team, though, that I look at to go, damn, they're talented enough on paper that even with Jacoby Brissett, they should still be a pain in the butt no matter who they play against. There should not be a team in football that really overpowers or outmatches the Cleveland Browns in any certain area. They are a very well-constructed football team.
But isn't a completely different approach offensively if you have Deshaun Watson versus somebody else? I mean, Watson allows you to open up the passing game in a way that the Browns haven't
definitely,
in recent years.
Definitely, right.
And if it's Jacoby Brissett or Baker Mayfield, it's more of a running presence.
Yes, I don't disagree with you. They're more dangerous. We know that with Deshaun Watson. If he's, you know, hitting on all cylinders and ready to go and played a few weeks, then yes, they're going to be a handful to deal with, especially with what we know with their running game. You're right. I mean, if it's Jacoby Brissett or Baker Mayfield, yeah, there's going to be a little bit more maybe of a conscious effort to tie the run game with the pass game. Let's not put it all on our quarterback and make him, you know, have to carry the team that way. And that's where the Deshaun Watson thing is interesting because he'll be able to do that on the days their running game doesn't work. But, man, when their running game does work and then you got Deshaun Watson, watch out. And that's what's going to be tough about them. But, yeah, that's Watson is going to be a big thing to watch as far as how the AFC plays out. That's for sure.
One other point regarding the Browns before we take a break, and I think this technically falls into the Chris in his hammock with his pina colada and his blunt four-day weekend because Peter King and I mentioned this on Friday,
right.
The report from the Charlotte Observer that the Panthers wanted the Browns to pay $13 to $14 million of Baker Mayfield's $18.8 million salary as part of trade discussions that happened during the draft. It fell apart. It's a huge gap. It just shows you the lack of leverage the Browns have when it comes to foisting the entirety of the contract onto someone else. They're going to have to pay some of it, and in the Panthers' estimation, the Panthers wanted them to pay a lot of it. That is still out there. That is still lingering, whether it's the Seahawks, who have really not shown dramatic interest in Baker Mayfield, the Panthers, who haven't ruled out the possibility of bringing him in, the Browns maybe keeping him around until they know what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson, maybe somebody else out there. I don't know, but it's still unresolved, and now we know why he's not a Panther. The Panthers really wanted the Browns to pay a huge amount of the money that Mayfield will make this year.
I wonder what else they were going to send, you know, along with that. I had kind of missed this on Friday. I didn't really catch on to this until yesterday a little bit. But, yeah, I do wonder that just as far as where it is. Because, again, like you talked about, I mean, Cleveland just seems like they have very little leverage here, in my opinion. I just, again, you could say all you want. Deshaun Watson, oh, he gets suspended. Like, is that really realistic to think that Baker Mayfield's going to come back and play for you maybe? I don't see that happening. I just don't think Baker Mayfield's that guy. I think he'd rather go to a Seattle and compete or compete in Carolina. Or who knows? Maybe Jameis Winston's still limping a little bit and he goes to New Orleans. You know, there's plenty of places I think of like that to where maybe that's what ends up happening there. So, yeah, but I'm a little surprised. I just would like to know what kind of pick was talked about along with we want you to pay the $13 or $14 million. I would think they could find a sweet spot between the pick and the money at some point, but obviously Carolina wasn't happy about it.
But that's the key to remember. The more that the Panthers are paying,
yeah,
the less they give up in draft pick, the less that the Panthers pay of that $18.8 million, the more they'd be willing to give up. And it becomes a transaction that way. So it's part of the balance. So, you know, if the Panthers were sending a third-round pick and expecting the Browns to pay $13 to $14 million, that's one thing. If the Panthers are sending a sixth-round pick and expecting the Browns to pay $13 to $14 million, that's another. But those two things go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And as one drops, the other goes up. As the other goes down, the other goes up. And you find the sweet – it's two different things that have to come together to make that deal happen. And obviously it hasn't happened yet, and we don't know
what
when
do you
it will.
Think? What do you like? What's your gut? What's pasta and meatballs? Do you think he ends up there? Where do you feel like he's going to end up when all said and done?
I want to say the Browns because I feel like they're going to need him, but that bridge is obliterated,
it
and I've heard
like
nothing.
It.
I've seen nothing to suggest that they've found a way to mend fences.
Right.
I think Carolina is the only one that makes sense right now. And they've already, the bottom line is we know they wanted him. We know they wanted him. The question, though, is what do they do with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Matt Corral? What do you do at that point? Or do you just go with Mayfield and Darnold and let Corral develop this year? I don't know.
I know. I don't know either. You know, and what you, I think, you know, you run the risk a little bit if you're Cleveland where, okay, now you didn't make that move to trade Baker during the draft and all that, and now, wait, Ben McAdoo, who's there in Carolina, oh, wait, you know, hey, Sam Darnold's doing pretty good. I mean, he's really taking on the offense. Man, I like Sam Darnold. You know, I think we can make it work. Or Matt Corral. Whoa, damn, Matt Corral's a little more advanced than I thought, and we've already heard them gushing about his talent a little bit. And then you add that could hurt, you know, Baker's chances there too. At some point, Carolina can just go, you know what? We're actually kind of good. We're not going to mess with what we got here right now and you know, throw another, you know, wrench into this whole situation and everything there. And I think you are risking that, too, with Cleveland.
You know what? I think they're going to keep him for now.
Yeah.
And for a couple of reasons. He's making the 18.8 whether he's on the team or not.
Yep, right.
They could carry him through training camp. And if he plays ball with them, you know, if they say, we're going to pay you to not show up, and he's okay with that. The only problem is if he shows up and creates a distraction. And then if he goes too far, that's when they can try to do the Earl Thomas thing that the Ravens did a couple of years ago, where they cut him for reasons unrelated to skill, injury, or cap. For personal conduct, it's detrimental to the best interest of the team if he's in there just acting up and being a jerk. And that's where he needs to be very careful to always do the right thing. He needs to be Eddie Haskell when he's at the facility if he shows up. But if he's okay with the idea, we're going to put you on ice, we're going to wait for a trade opportunity, we're going to pay you every check, and then let's get to the trade deadline and see what happens. And on the other side of the trade deadline, we'll work something out to make you a free agent if we can't trade you. That's the only deal that I think Baker Mayfield would go with at this point, if it entails not being released by the Browns in the immediate future. An understanding that he'll be traded, potentially, and then after the trade deadline, they'll do what they did with Odell Beckham Jr. What'd they do? They kept Beckham until the trade deadline. They didn't trade him, and then they released him after that. And he did give up some of his money. But I think if Mayfield's going to play ball with the Browns, maybe they need to accept the fact that they're going to pay him the full amount of what he's due after the trade deadline if they can't trade him. I have a feeling that's where this is going.
It could be. I just know, and I think you would be the same way. If I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm not going to be like that easy. I'm coming to work still. I'm going to make things uncomfortable. I want to play football this year. I only have so many years in my career to play football, and you guys screwed this up, and you guys put me in this situation, and now you guys are going to hold me hostage. And that's where, if I'm him, at some point you got to go, if it gets to that point, and I do think you got to show up, practice, and start being a little bit annoying and hopefully not cross that line to where they can run you out of town like Earl Thomas and what you're saying there.
And the other side of it, too, is this isn't just about making your $18.8 million this year. This is about laying the foundation
for future,
for next year.
Right.
So you go somewhere and you play this year and you show that you can play. So if he's on ice until the trade deadline and then they cut him, this isn't plug and play like OBJ. You got to
exactly.
Find a team that needs a quarterback. Who's going to need a quarterback in November or December? So you just hang around and wait for somebody to get injured, and then you get thrust into a situation.
And you're trying to learn a
playbook
and
that
all
basket,
these. Exactly. And maybe you don't play good because you're learning an offense. You're right. Now your value's hurt. So that's, to me, you know, Mike, you've said it a few times. I think at some point, You know, he might have to pull the old Steve McNair or whatever if it gets to that and start just going, okay, I'm here. Yep, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. And I hope it's uncomfortable because I'm going to be here every day. And he might have to do that at some point.
This is like Deshaun Watson in Houston last year.
It is, right?
Really?
It's funny. You're right. It really is.
How long will this dance last of team paying a guy to be on the team but not play? It just does not feel like it's getting resolved anytime soon. Let's take a break. When we return, we resolve three more spots on the Chris Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown. Three guys who were all taken in round one last year. Where do they land? In what order on the Chris Countdown? We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Chris Sims, Top 40 Quarterback Countdown. We are almost halfway through. Three more today. And there they are, all first-round picks in 2021. Let's begin at number 24, coming in just ahead of Jalen Hurts, the last guy we talked about, the first overall pick in 2021, Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence. We didn't see much from him last year, through no fault of his own.
Right,
that was
right.
The was Urban
tough.
Meyer yeah. lost season. So I don't know how you read anything
tough.
At all into Trevor Lawrence's skills and abilities, but the reality is for 3 years he was the can't-miss first overall pick,
right.
top NFL prospect. Let's get him to the NFL and let him shine. Now he gets a chance to shine with, you know, somebody who isn't Urban Meyer as the head coach.
Yeah, exactly right. It is tough. It's tough to go back. They had a lot of issues with the football team for sure. You know, they weren't always good at running the ball, protecting him. The team was kind of all over the place, like you said, to begin with. Had a hard time sometimes going, wait, what are they actually trying to do on offense today? You know, I think, you know, when you really talk about it, first off, hey, he's big, he's strong, he's a hell of an athlete. There's no doubt about that. And we saw some of his potential in the last week of the year in a few games, even the way he played to the Jets in New York. I mean, there is some things about this guy that are, you know, wowing altogether. You see him standing there in the pocket, doesn't need a lot of room, throws the ball pinpoint up the sideline. Perfect throw there. You know, it doesn't take a lot of effort for him to do that. Here, against the Cardinals, great job. Remember, this is one of the reading the field, going through the reads. That was his fourth guy. He gets over, throws a ball in the corner of the end zone. Perfect spot. Again, we talk about the size. Size is a skill, like we saw in those last two throws, to throw over the line of scrimmage. And then on the move, hey, this is for a guy that's 6'6", man. The guy can move. There's no doubt about that. And as the year went on, he got better in the pocket too, Mike. He was a little spoiled by his Clemson, you know, fairy tale football team he was, but he learned how to kind of hang in there and move in the right spots. Now, the thing that he's got to work on, and compared to maybe some of the other rookie quarterbacks that we're going to talk about here in the second, not as many wow throws as I would expected from the can't-miss prospect, you know, since Andrew Luck or John Elway, right? The throwing can be inconsistent. You know, Mike, there's times where you can watch him throw 10-yard out throws, and he'll throw the ball five or six different ways all out of the 10 throws, where the mechanics are all over the place, the legs go all over the place, and that lends to too many just inconsistencies in his game at times. So really good player, but did not have as many wow plays as maybe Zach Wilson or Justin Fields did when I broke these guys down as I was going through this. Like there, you see. You know, people in his face, and like throws the ball like stepping backwards, and here's, hey, bad decision. Some of that's going to happen, but the quality of the football at times is what scared me a few times, and that's where I hope Doug Peterson and company can kind of get him on track. There, you know, the pocket there. Hell, all you had to do is step up. He continues to go back, then he tries to make an unreal throw down the field. It was impressive what he did there, but just not the best decision in the world. He'll clean some of that up, like you said, with Doug Peterson helping him out.
Doug Peterson got the most out of Carson Wentz that anyone has gotten, and then shepherded the Nick Foles-led Eagles to a Super Bowl win. Here's Trevor Lawrence from recently discussing what impact he thinks his new coach, Doug Peterson, will have on Lawrence's growth as he enters year two.
I think you can always tell the way a coach communicates with a quarterback. You know, they could, because he's been in my shoes. So, quarterback's an interesting position. It's not a big rah-rah, you know, chew somebody out. I mean, some, you know, you have some coaches that are like that, but for me, that's just not what I need. I can have a conversation, and Coach Pearson's great about that. In every play, he gives you a piece of feedback that another coach might not give you, just because he knows what it's like, and it's something little that he might see that someone else doesn't see. So.
Yeah. Hey, look, he had no idea what he was getting into last year with Urban Meyer. He lived it. He did a great job of, other than the day, what was the day they broke down the huddle? What did they do? 1, 2, 3, grind?
Grinding.
Yeah. but I think Lawrence, when you think about everything he went through last year, there has to be something from that that can be used in a positive way. I mean, when you weather that weird, bizarre storm of unforced errors that Urban Meyer brought onto the team, and the yelling and the screaming and the demeaning and the bullying and everything that went along with it, and now you have a guy in there who knows how to coach NFL players, who was an NFL player, who knows who Aaron Donald is. I mean, and Urban Meyer denied that he didn't know who Aaron Donald is. Sure, Jan, is what I say to that. But this could be, when you look at all the money they've spent, when you look at how nobody's giving them any real credit or faith,
right.
I don't know. We've seen crazier things happen. If it really was Urban Meyer last year, you remove Urban Meyer and you put a real coach in his place, the Jaguars could take off this year.
I would think that they're going to be definitely a pain in the butt. You know, him getting cleaning up a few things, being a part of a better offensive system. You add Christian Kirk with Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault, and then Evan Engram to go along with that, and they made the offensive line better. Yeah, I could see them being a pain in the butt. Certainly, I'm not saying playoffs, but like a team where they upset a few teams throughout the year where we go, whoa, we didn't see that coming. And then, you know, to your point too, with Doug Peterson, a guy that's come from the Andy Reid, you know, Mike Holmgren type of school where they prop up the quarterbacks. They make you the quarterback feel like he's king. You know, hey, Doug Peterson, yeah, I mean, he's in Kansas City. Mahomes is king. He grew up underneath, you know, Brett Favre in Green Bay. Brett Favre was king. He tried to make Wentz king there, and then he got hurt and they had a few issues. But I think he's going to help Trevor Lawrence out a lot. Lawrence has big-time talent. He's just got to kind of rein it in and be a little bit more consistent, learn how to play in the pocket and be a little bit more of a consistent thrower. And he could be one of those guys that makes an incredible jump here on the list, you know, going to next year.
Next up on the Chris Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown, coming in at number 23, a guy, and got to give you credit, Chris, you don't double down. You don't stick to a take that you end up disagreeing with. You have reassessed Justin Fields. You have elevated Justin Fields. You like what you see in number 23 on the list, Bears quarterback Justin Fields.
No doubt. I'm not going to be stubborn. I don't ever try to be biased here. I always try to do my best to take that out. And I think Justin Fields was one of the pleasant surprises of the 2021 season. I mean, he was phenomenal. First off, when you just talk about the physical ability, it's wowing. I mean, I talked about the Trevor Lawrence and maybe lack of wow plays, maybe compared to some of these other guys. Fields had some wow plays in every game. You know, whether it was with his arms or his legs, you went, oh my gosh, that's special right there. You know, his running he's as gifted a runner as there is in football, other than maybe Lamar Jackson. But I think he's probably close to in that class as far as a guy that can go 60 yards to the house or a touchdown, you know, break ankles, break tackles, do all that. But this is where I was most impressed with this guy. His throwing in the pocket was more, I'm going to use the word consistent again. And he didn't lose control of the ball nearly as much as he did in Ohio State. And made some wow throws like you see here, where he pushed the ball down the field. The Steelers game, you know, again, in the pocket, people bearing down on him. He is tough as hell, I know that. And putting the ball and the money into a tight window. You know, and then showed the ability to, wait, let me be a playmaker. Make some plays outside the pocket. Going to the left, throwing the ball to the right. This run right here, insanity in the membranity. I mean, I don't know. This is the 49ers. This is the best defense in football. They got guys all over the field with seven rockets up their ass. He's running by them like they're kids. So he really showed me something. Pretty smart, saw the field well. I'm still not sold on the motion. I do want it to – I still think there's some things to clean up there. You know, he can still get stuck on receivers downfield a little too long where you're like, wait, stop looking at the post. The guy coming across is wide open, but he's a rookie, and I expect him to be another one like Trevor Lawrence to kind of makes a big jump this year.
There's such a strange vibe with the Bears.
It is weird.
Look at what the Jaguars have done. The Jaguars have gone out and they spent. They tried to spend their way out of dysfunction. They're trying to put talent around Trevor Lawrence.
That's right.
To elevate the team. Take advantage of the fact that they got two more years under Trevor Lawrence's rookie contract before he's even eligible for a second deal. Meanwhile, the Bears feel like they're tearing down, not building up around Justin Fields. And then if they do stink this year, the average fan is going to say, Justin Fields must stink. Justin Fields can't play. Justin Fields isn't very good. And I feel bad for him that the Bears aren't doing the same thing the Jaguars are doing to load the cannon around him.
Yes.
With the kind of talent that will help him thrive at a high level, and it's going to be on him if it doesn't work.
That's where I'm, and I'm glad you brought me here, and this is why you're the man. You're actually naturally bringing me to a point that I wanted to make, and your point sets it up. I mean, perfectly, because we saw this a little last year, and what's going to happen to this guy? Like you just said, it's on him. It's on him. Nobody's going to care. Oh, your receivers, nobody knows your name, and you guys can't run the ball, whatever. And you know what that's going to happen? It's going to make him try to make crazy plays and do crazy things. And if I had another thing just watching back the year a little bit with Justin Fields and throws and scrambles is he did put himself in danger too much. And for a guy that I'm rooting for and he's got incredible talent – you know, that it's situations like you're explaining that can make you want to do too much. And I just, you know, hey, slide. Sometimes you got to go down. You know, those are things he certainly got to learn. But, man, it was a good rookie year and something to build off of for Justin Fields.
As you were explaining that possibility, it made me think of one of your big criticisms of Deshaun Watson from past years when he would treat every play like it was the last play of the Super Bowl. Well, what help did he have around
exactly
him?
Right. No running game, nothing else. You're right. Exactly.
Maybe the wisdom, if you're a Bears fan in all of this, maybe the hope is that Justin Fields will try to do too much and will learn through the process of trying to do too much that he can do too much.
Right.
I don't know. That, you know, like, if
like
you put
that,
it all on
that's
him
not needed.
And he you can't have that. You can't
no,
have that.
It's not
yeah,
needed.
You can't have that. You're not yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is, maybe if he does get forced to be the one-man band,
yeah, I know.
He thrives,
right.
And they end up with a much better quarterback on the other end of the experience.
You could get that. You're right. You know, he gets used to just carrying the squad with not maybe the greatest amount of talent to where, yeah, it develops him into being able to, you know, have that line of, wait, he can run the offense, but if we're banged up or not playing good, he can make some freaky plays. I hear you there. And I, you know, for his sake, I hope that works. I just want him to be careful for sure because he was a lot of fun to watch last year.
All right, another guy who was a lot of fun to watch, although the team around him wasn't very good, could be a lot better this year, Zach Wilson, the next up on the Chris Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown. We'll break him down when PFT Live continues right after this. Chris is off till Monday. I'll be back tomorrow. Actually, Chris won't be back till Tuesday.
See ya. We'll
see you 4-day morning.
Weekend. Screw work.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Oh, God. That's good. That is definitely rolling out the green carpet, as Pete said. That was good. It's just amazing how the world has changed. My God,
we
didn't
know.
Even
we can
joke
about
it openly.
That now, right, right. I know.
Wow.
It is fun. It is. It's, why shouldn't we be able to? Again, I that's what I always tried to challenge ever since I got in this business because, you know, you hear guys talk, I'm going to go home and have a drink and have a beer and, you know, do this and do that. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to go home and, you know, smoke some weed. What's the difference? Like, you know, get off my lawn with that crap. So I'm glad we're breaking down some barriers.
You've made the argument very compellingly in the past that the abuse of alcohol is responsible for far more destruction and mayhem than, you know, people who smoke marijuana. You smoke marijuana, you just kind of hang around. You know, you know, I mean, you know, you don't get into fights. You know,
no,
just
you don't drive 190 miles per hour. Right,
a society that are sparked by people who are inebriated, as opposed to, you know, if you're a little bit high, you're, I mean, for the most part, you're not going to bother anybody. You're just going to go sit there,
yeah,
eat some Doritos.
Yes, exactly right. See what's on the TV. I mean, that's about as bad as it gets. So you know, but I think people have realized that, which is a good thing. At least most people, we're going in the right direction.
Well, we are going in the right direction in the Chris Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown, and that is closer and closer to the top. Coming in at number 22, a guy who was the second overall pick last year, one of Chris's favorites. We didn't really get to see much high-end production from him because he was running for his life pretty much every time he was on the field. Zach Wilson, the guy that you compared to Mahomes and Rodgers, and we've seen a few flashes of it. Maybe this year we'll see a lot more.
Yeah, well, I think we will. We will. Now, listen, I think the first thing I should say, even with Zach Wilson, or maybe even going back to Justin Fields, because Pete got in my ear and he's like, hey, the way you're talking about these guys, most people are going to just go, you think they're awesome, they're awesome, they're awesome. Listen, I see a lot of awesome with these guys. I do. There's a ton of talent. They were in crap situations. Let's remember this a little bit. Justin Fields, no quarterback could have gone in there and looked that good, let alone they had games where, as awesome as he was, you'd go, wait, did they run a quarterback design run or do anything to take advantage of how awesome the guy is and put the defense in a bind? No. You know, so now, yeah, there was issues there. But again, don't evaluate just the stats and the wins and losses. Again, you could put Brady on the Bears or the Jets, so things aren't going to look that much different. Oh, they win one more game. Whoopity-doo. All right, so that's where we all got to digest this the right way. Zach Wilson, same type of thing. First off, it was a slow start to the year. Sure, we know that. He got hurt. He got a chance to reevaluate things. And, man, when he came back in, he was special, in my opinion. And special in some games with no Jamison Crowder, no Elijah Moore, no Corey Davis. And the one thing about Zach Wilson that pops off to me, especially watching these guys, you know, back-to-back as I'm going through it, his arm, it pops off the screen. I mean, I think you'll see it here just watching these highlights. The ball comes out of his hand at a different pace than Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. And he can do it with ease and more awkward positions. So he's phenomenal that way. You know, I'm big on, of course, the physical ability. The arm is special. And then the ability to move and run and do all that is special too. I mean, he ran for a 50-yard touchdown against the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's a real legit athlete. But here's the reason, too, Mike, that I think I'd put him above some of the other guys or the other two rookies is he, to me, ran the most legit NFL offense out of all the rookie quarterbacks not named Mac Jones. They asked him to do the most of, like, this kind of stuff right here. Stay in the pocket. I know he runs here. Read the play. This is a real NFL play down the middle. We want you to read the coverage and make the appropriate throw. This shows his great running ability. And like I said, the guy has a little bit of it all. He's got some special playmaking ability, but that was the thing that I liked the most about it, Mike. He made the most legit NFL throws from within the pocket. They asked him to run a real offense. He wasn't managed maybe as much as Trevor or Justin Fields. And I think that when I look back at that, that really impressed me with the amount of wow throws that maybe the normal fan might not really appreciate completely, like me, ex-quarterback, to go, oh, wow, he read that coverage and, whoa, he put that ball in a tight spot 15 yards down the middle. And, man, that's a similar play I see Aaron Rodgers do and stuff like that. And that, I think, is what maybe give him the little extra bump maybe over Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence.
We talked earlier about everything the Jaguars did to help Trevor Lawrence in year two, and there was a lot of excitement generated by the Jets because of the draft. But when you look at the full scope of the offseason efforts to improve the team, have they really done enough when we consider how insanely competitive the AFC East and the rest of the AFC are going to be this year?
I think so. I do. You know, I look at them and go, okay, you got, you know, Uzoma at tight end. Corey Davis and Elijah Moore, you got to be excited about that. You add Garrett Wilson to the conversation now and Ruckert from Ohio State at tight end. And you go, wow. Breece Hall at running back, who everybody, I think, would agree in the passing game and the space game was the best running back in the draft as far as that's concerned. So, yeah, Laken Tomlinson at guard. And, you know, of course, they need Mekhi Becton to be healthy. And then you look at that and you go, okay, the offensive line could be good. So I do think they've put weapons around him. I do think it's a good offensive system. And like I said, what I'm encouraged by was the fact that I think he made more wow plays and throws within the normal rhythm of the offense compared to the other rookie quarterbacks that we saw. And maybe even that goes for Mac Jones as far as wow throws within the normal rhythm of the offense. But I do think they've done enough, Mike. I think you couple with some of the additions and then guys that they come back that are going to be healthy that were hurt last year. Again, I think the Jets can be a pain in the butt like the Jaguars. But, man, Mike, we talked about this last week. The start of their schedule is brutal once again.
Yes. Yes. And the easy games, the more winnable games are all after week 9.
Yeah.
And this is one of the important things of the schedule release. We know who they're going to play. We just don't know when. And their schedule is front-loaded with some tough games.
The AFC North, the first four games of the year. Yeah. The AFC North, the first four of the games of the year, followed by the Dolphins, the Packers, the Broncos, the Patriots, the Bills, bye week, and then Patriots. I don't, to me, again, I know we don't know, but we know it's early and you never know how good these teams are, but like I look at those first 9 opponents and go, like, even if they're not as good as we think they're going to be, they're going to be a pain in the butt no matter who you are. There's a ton of talent on those teams. So even if they're a little underwhelming, it's still like, wow, is that an unbelievable schedule. And the Jets, this is, I think, the third year in a row. I just go, man, no breathing room, no chance to gain a little confidence for a young team early in the year to have it be a jump-off point.
They'll be the underdog in every one of those games,
right?
On the left side of the
yeah.
They'll be the underdog. It may be slim at Cleveland if they don't have Deshaun Watson, but they're not going to be favored to win that game. They will be on the wrong side of the betting line in every single one of those 9 games, and they're going to be hard pressed to win more than 2 or 3 of them, frankly. And if they do, they're going to be set up for a good stretch run because they got some games they could win on the back end of the schedule. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up later in the program, in honor of the 79th birthday of Joe Namath, we'll draft the best non-quarterbacks from the Jets division, the AFC East. We'll do that later on this Tuesday edition of PFT Live. News that broke on Monday, and it was a stunner. Jalen Reagor tweeted a message that indicated that Jeff Gladney, first-round pick in the 2020 draft, had passed away, and ultimately it was confirmed that he and a female passenger died in an automobile accident in Dallas on Monday. Gladney, along with Reagor, went to Texas Christian, and again, Gladney, the 31st overall pick in the 2020 draft. He had signed earlier this year with the Arizona Cardinals. Same feelings as what happened with Dwayne Haskins. It's just that reminder of how quickly lives can change permanently beyond the person whose life is lost, the family members, the teammates, everyone involved. A horrible situation, and condolences to all of his teammates out there at every level of football, everyone who knew him, his family as well. I'm at a loss. And every time, the first thing I do now, Chris, when it's one of these young players, I check to see if they're younger than my son.
Yeah.
And the past two have been. And it just, there's just something that makes that resonate even more, because I can't fathom having to deal with what his family members have to deal with.
It hurts. I can't even imagine being in their shoes either. It's what I think of as well, being a father. It is. It's just life being so fragile. A young man like this with so much of his life still in front of him, in the middle of a great part of his life, that's where it hurts. It really does. And, it's a brutal one. That was one that definitely made my heart hurt. What was that, Sunday morning? It really did. And condolences to him, his family. I just can't imagine. I feel so bad. Stinks for the Arizona Cardinals. They needed this guy to help them out. I mean, he's a guy that's got talent and some untapped potential, so it's just all around just really stinks. But, man, it just shows you how fragile life can be.
We'll go ahead and take a break. We'll have more PFT Live coming up right after this.
So a couple things here.
Yes.
About 3 minutes ago you said
Simsisms, kinks in the armor.
And I feel like the year in Buffalo let me realize that it was them. It's not him. And I saw, some of those,
kinks in the armor worked out.
That might be new.
That might be a new one.
I might have picked up a new one.
A kink might work. I mean, it makes sense.
It's, yeah, you're blending two. I think
that's what I do.
That's what you do.
That's what I do.
That's what I'm saying. It's a new one.
It is.
Normally, Florio picks out those things, but I heard that one.
I'm glad you're jumping on there.
I haven't heard that one before. I want to just make sure that we use that again.
Simsisms.
I recognize no Simsisms that did not happen on this program. It doesn't count.
Doesn't matter.
Anywhere else. Sorry, but I won't do it. I will recognize this, however, Chris. Joe Namath, 79 today.
Wow.
And we have some photographs from the Super Bowl 48 coin toss where Joe Namath upstages the big effort by showing up in the gigantic fur coat. Wasn't there some conversation about that in advance, about wearing a coat?
Right, exactly. Joe Namath called my dad earlier in the week, you know, because they're going to flip the coin for the Super Bowl. And he wanted to make sure, and he kind of went along, you're going to wear like a blazer. Okay, yeah, me too. So he was kind of setting my dad up to make you look like, hey, I hope you look like normal, you know, Johnny businessman, because I'm coming in Broadway Joe style. And he wore this and stole the show, of course, and it was pretty amazing. My dad loves Joe Namath, got a kick out of it. And then if you remember, the best part of it is he's in the coat. You got, you know, the Seahawks and Peyton Manning and the Broncos, and he decides, and Terry McCauley's the referee, he decides to flip the coin when he wants to, and they're not even ready for it, which was also hilarious.
Joe Namath, being Joe Namath, and I feel like he's been 79 for 20 years. So maybe he has been. I don't know. Maybe he's just decided to stick on 79. All right, we are going to stick in the AFC East. The best non-quarterbacks drafted today. No trivia, no time for it, unofficially. Pete didn't come up with the question. Chris, you're up.
All right, well, I'm going to go to Tyreek Hill. I'm going to go right there. I mean, he's the most explosive guy on the offensive side of the ball in the division. Of course, we know what he is. I mean, he can catch a slant and go 80 yards to the house or just run by you for an 80-yard bomb, return kicks, punts, whatever. But I will go with Tyreek Hill as my first pick.
Stephon Diggs is going to be very disappointed in you.
I
will not allow him to be very disappointed in me. Stephon Diggs, still one of the top receivers in the NFL. And when you consider that he's got Josh Allen and throwing him the football, that makes it even, you know. I know Tyreek's kind of been all over the place on Tua, but I think he would be far more confident that his skills would be used to their full abilities if he was with Josh Allen, like Stephon Diggs is. So I'll take Diggs.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. You're right. And Diggs is a phenomenal football player and does some things better than Tyreek Hill as far as route running and some of those intermediate routes. Man, Diggs is special that way. So if you really got an offense that values route running, that's where, you know, he certainly brings some value there for sure. All right, I'm going to go down to Miami again. I'm going to take Xavien Howard. Xavien Howard's one of the best corners in football. Zone, man, doesn't matter. And I don't think there's really any doubt, probably the best ball skills in any corner in the league. I mean, he plays the ball like a wide receiver. It's kind of special that way. What'd you say, Pete, there? Pete's trying to tell me Trayvon Diggs has better ball skills. Right, but it's right there in that category as far as guys where the ball's 50-50 and you go, man, usually the DB messes up or chokes when the ball's getting close. Not Xavien Howard. He's very special that way, and he's my second pick.
Well, you go back to Miami, I'll go back to Buffalo. I mean, Von Miller is still Von Miller.
Yeah.
I know that injuries and, you know, he's 6 years removed now from winning the Super Bowl MVP. He is still Von Miller. He is still one of the best pass rushers of this generation, and he is a member of the Bills right now. Are you kidding me? Exactly the shot in the arm that defense needs. If he can get back to just what he was a couple of years ago. I mean, hell, he came on strong late for the Rams last year, even though that contract was puffed up to make it look better than it was. They're still paying him real money over the next couple of years because they see what he can do.
Yeah, exactly right. At end of the day, he's still one of the best pass rushers in the game. He is. We saw that down the stretch of the year. I don't know. Was anybody better rushing the passer coming off the edge of a defense the last few weeks of the regular season into the playoffs? Von Miller, he showed you.
Aaron Donald.
Well, it does.
It
certainly does help to have Aaron Donald. But, you know, either way, he got it done. That's for sure. And he's a handful one-on-one still, to your point. So I like that pick. I mean, I'm staying in Miami. I don't know. I'm going to go all three guys with the Miami Dolphins. I don't give a damn. I'm sorry. The Jets got a lot of good players. I don't know if there's anybody worthy of this right here, right now. Same with the Patriots. A lot of good, but I don't know if there's the great, like you see. And I'm going to go Jalen Waddle. I am. I'm going to go. Jalen Waddle's too special. He just jitterbug, rockets up his butt, doesn't matter. But just like Tyreek Hill, it's a playmaker that can score from any place on the field, let alone I think he's probably a little bit more of a better – he's a better route runner than Tyreek Hill. He has a little bit of the Stephon Diggs intermediate stuff that I was talking about. That's where they can really run a lot of intricate slot route combinations with him that's special, let alone it's rare to have that kind of guy who can – you know, fly and challenge Tyreek Hill in a race. So I'm going three Dolphins in a row here, Mike.
Well, I'll go three Bills in a row because there's only one person in the entire NFL who scored four touchdowns in that epic greatest game we ever saw, Bills-Chiefs playoff game, and that was Gabriel Davis. He had a great rookie season, a little disappointing going into year two, but exploded in the playoffs, and I think he is ready to take off in a big way in 2022. Stephon Diggs, Gabriel Davis. Look, we got four receivers from two of the teams in the AFC East, and it's all Bills and Dolphins. No Jets, and shockingly, no Patriots.
No, it is. And, you know, you look at the Jets and the Patriots, there's a lot of players that are, you know, you're right on the list that are in the conversation, but I think when it comes down to it, you can't pull the trigger. I mean, Matt Judon certainly thought about him there. Quinnen Williams, I think you'd be crazy not to have him down there. He's too good of a football player. But a lot of it's like, wait, we see some talent, and it's kind of like potential that's untapped yet, where I think the guys we talked about are kind of proven commodities. Waddle's the only guy there that's a rookie, but we saw what he could do as a rookie. It was pretty special. So I don't think it's crazy that we ended up with a lot of the guys from these two teams.
There are many players on the Dolphins roster about whom fans should feel very, very good. And as we have clearly established from the moment they traded for Tyreek Hill, it's all on the quarterback. This is his opportunity. It is loaded for him if he can step up to the challenge, and we'll see if he can. Let's take a break. When we return, the mystery of the popcorn muscles has been solved. We'll tell you who got called popcorn muscles and who did the calling of popcorn muscles when PFT Live concludes right after this.
Yeah, Joey Porter's one of those guys who, when you got guys who talk a lot of trash, you know, just want to talk about people or put people down, they have their own insecurities. And his insecurities, I don't know, but he's definitely one of those guys who, you know, all those muscles are popcorn muscles. He's soft. He's one of those guys that, you know, no matter how big he is, he still can get knocked on his butt, and he's soft. He's soft at heart, and you can tell the way he's talking. His nickname is Peasy. I don't know what Peasy is. Joey.
Brandon Marshall accusing Joey Porter of having popcorn muscles. That was from the 2008 season. We were talking about popcorn muscles earlier in the program. Kudos to the control room for finding the solution. It's Joey Porter and Brandon Marshall, your former teammate, used that term.
That'd be a battle right there. I mean, those two, there's a lot of muscles there. I don't know if any of them are popcorn muscles, but Brandon Marshall's as tough a receiver as you're ever going to find. And Joey Porter, you couldn't pay me money to mess with him. So that I'd get some popcorn
I wouldn't
to watch
mess
them
with Brandon
fight.
Marshall.
Right.
All right.
Either one.
We're done.
See ya.
See you tomorrow.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.